Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Sleater, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, July 10th, 2024. We have four cases set for our oral calendar today. The first one of which is A24-0030, and Leo is a Gadboy.
Gadboy, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Versus Urban Hill Condominium Association. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant if you so choose. The podium in the middle has a button underneath that you can lower and raise. You can also lower and raise the microphone as well so we can hear you. This is being recorded and it is being live streamed. However, no other recording is permitted of this proceeding. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd like to introduce my client who's here with me this morning. This is Mr. Gadboy. Your Honor, before I start, I've got copies of some photographs.
And counsel, if you could state your name for the record and the party you're representing as well.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. My name is Robert McClay, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Gadboy, in this case. Before I begin my oral presentation, I'd like to, with the court's permission, pass out copies of some photographs and drawings that are in the record, and I think it will certainly enable me to make a better presentation to the court, and I also hope it'll make it easier for you to follow my presentation. I've provided a copy to my opponent, and she has not objected to my doing so, subject to your consent.
If you could hand it to the marshal, please, and then he will pass them on to us.
Thank
you, proceed, counsel.
There are three points that I would like to focus on in my oral presentation. The first is the standard of review. The second is the rights granted to my client by the exclusive easement. And the third is the interpretation of the relevant bylaw language. As to the standard of review, the case presents a question of law, namely the interpretation of the two contracts, the bylaws, and the declaration of the Irving Hill Association. As the court, as each of you know, contract interpretation is a question of law which the appellate court reviews de novo. In the opposing brief, respondent sets out the standard for review of summary judgment, whether there are any genuine issues of material fact. Here, the question is not whether there is a genuine issue of material fact, but whether the contracts granting my client an exclusive easement have been correctly interpreted by the trial court.
But counsel, the district court granted summary judgment, correct?
Excuse me?
The district court granted summary judgment to respond.
Certainly did.
Right. So why doesn't the standard of review regarding summary judgment apply?
Well, excuse me, I just explained why I think the standard of review is whether or not the trial court properly interpreted the two contracts. If you believe a different standard is applicable.
I think what I'm trying to get at is a finer point is I think the overarching, at least from my perspective, I think the overarching standard of review is summary judgment, whether or not the district court erred in granting summary judgment. Underneath that standard of review is whether or not the district court erred by misinterpreting the agreements.
Yeah, you've stated it better than I did, and I defer to you on this. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
The second point I want to address is the easement rights granted my client by the declaration and the bylaws. The interpretation of the Declaration of Bylaws concerns the terms exclusive easement and exclusive use.
Counsel, before you go on, sure. Actually, the answer you gave to Judge Reyes triggered a bit of a question. It's assuming we're looking at the same document, which we are, documents, would it only be a factual issue that would be in dispute only if there's ambiguity? And in other words, if there's no ambiguity, we just look at the contract as the district court did, or the bylaws as the district court did, and do our de novo review of whether summary judgment was properly granted. Am I correct in that regard?
With all due respect, I don't think you are, and I'll explain it in more detail. The ambiguity that you're referring to, I think you're referring to an ambiguity in the bylaws. But
that was my question. Yeah. Only if there is an ambiguity, if we agree there is, would there be a potential factual dispute? Because otherwise, we're just all looking at the same words that the district court did in granting summary judgment to respondent, right?
For now, let me defer to you. I'll make a point towards the end of my presentation.
But maybe I'll be a bit more direct. What precisely is the ambiguity in your client's opinion?
Well, I frankly, at the end of my argument, I don't think there is. I think the bylaw, as I'll explain, is clear, and I also think it doesn't apply to the issue here. I think the court was required to decide the issue based simply on the language in the declaration, and I think in that regard, the trial court erred.
Thank you.
Is that sufficient?
Yes, thank
you. Okay, thank you. The declaration provides that the patio is encumbered with a pertinent easement for such use of which it is designed. And that is, of course, in favor of the owner of the unit here, my client. And that's Declaration 7. There are no limitations on exclusivity. Similarly, the bylaws state that a patio deck or balcony to which an apartment has sole access shall be for the exclusive use of the owner of such apartment. And that's Bylaw I. As with the declaration language, exclusive easement, there are no limitations or restrictions on the bylaw language, exclusive use. The district court held that the extent of the permitted use was sufficiently defined by the governing documents, here the declaration of bylaws, respecting my client has the right to use the patio. But at the same time, the trial court held that the governing documents did not grant him the right to modify the patio as set forth in his proposal. And again, to Judge Slater, to your point, that's expressly where I think the court is in error, and I'll try to explain why. As noted, the Declaration of Bylaws do not define exclusive. The dictionary definition of exclusive is excluding or having power to exclude Merriam-Webster this year. The grant of the easement was a grant for an estate in land subject to the statute of frauds. Any limitations on its use must be set out in the grant, meaning must be set out in the declaration and or bylaws. Apart from a requirement in the bylaws that the balconies are to be kept free and clean of snow, ice, and any accumulation of water by the owner, there are no other conditions of use set out. The absence of any use limitations supports my client's position that his proposed use, enclosing the patio, is consistent with the existing use as a patio.
But, counsel, it seems like you're conflating use with modification. The exclusive use, so exclusive is modifying what type of use. So in other words, the apartment owner is the one who is entitled, who has an easement, to use it exclusively.
Right.
In other words, other apartment members can't come into your client's patio and say, oh, I want to use it. It's for his exclusive use and enjoyment.
Right.
But I don't see anywhere in the declaration or bylaws where the apartment owner is granted the right to modify the patio. And the right to modify seems to me to be a very, very different right that is not granted to the apartment owner at all.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that analysis is presented by the in the respondent's brief, and I think it is just incorrect. What we're here to decide is the scope of the grant of easement provided to my client in the declaration and the bylaws. And as I'll explain, the concept of modification I don't think applies here.
Why not?
Because he's going to continue to use it as a patio.
But use is different. So I get to use this bench, okay? But I don't have a right to modify this bench, to change the conformation of it to the way that I want to, that would fit my use, okay? So that's a right that the building owner has to modify it. Similarly, it seems to me that reading the bylaws, the board has the right to make any modifications, to make any changes. If I want to put this a little bit higher or lower it or change the layout of this bench, that's not a right that I have. Similarly, it seems like the board has the right to make those modifications. And so modification, at least from my perspective, seems to be a completely different right than the right to actually use a particular area.
Your Honor, I agree with you. My point is that this is not a modification. Okay, that's the point.
How is it not a modification?
Because it continues to be used as a patio. Contracts, that's what we have here, are to be interpreted based on the language of the contracts.
What does your client seek to have done to the patio?
To install a solarium, but it's still going to be a patio.
Okay, so, but that installation is a modification to the way that it is currently structured, isn't it?
Your Honor, please. The last thing I want to do is get across purposes with you. That's not my view, okay? My view is that the respondent's characterization of the solarium as a modification is not correct. My client is not changing the use of the exclusive easement that he holds. Simply the installation of the solarium simply enables him to use the patio for a greater period of time in the spring and in the fall. There is no change to the use.
Will there be a change to the structure of the patio?
Will there be a change to the structure of the patio? Not inconsistent with the grant of the easement.
That's not the question. Will the patio be changed in some way? In other words, isn't there going to be a need to have people come out and build something or put something and change the structure of the current patio?
Yes, but with all due respect, you're missing my point, which is that we're dealing with an easement right here. And that easement describes what his privileges are, okay? And his privileges are exclusively to use that facility as a patio. And that's what he's doing. And the construction of the solarium doesn't change that.
Who has the ability to change the structure of the patio under the bylaws and declaration?
It's silent in the declaration of the bylaws.
I think the parties dispute this, and I'm going to ask respondent this question too, but looking at section K of the, I think this is the bylaws here, it says additions, alterations, or improvements by owners. And it says without the prior written consent of the board of directors, no apartment owner shall make any additions, alteration, or improvement in and to the apartment, et cetera, or impair any easement.
That's correct.
And so if there is going to be any type of impairment to easement.
Impairment to what, Your Honor?
To the easement, impair the easement?
Well, it doesn't say, I don't think it says impair the easement. It says impair the structure or safety of the building.
Well, I'm reading it. It says, quote, or impair any easement.
Right. That's the last catch-all clause.
Right.
Okay.
So before any impairment to an easement takes place, it seems to me that the board, and I think this is consistent with your argument, that the board has to approve it. The prior written consent of the board.
Well, we're talking about impairment of an easement. Okay, two ways of looking at that. I'm running out of time. One is it's my client's easement. He's not objecting to this change. And the other issue would be, well, does the proposed change that he wants to make doesn't impair someone else's easement? And it does not, because the patio is enclosed on the east and west walls. There is no ingress and egress for other property owners across his patio. So my view is that the argument that the respondent made in her brief that this section does not apply, I think she's correct. Though had I had more time, I would have explained why I think there are two questions raised. But at the end of the day, I don't think that language has anything to do with your decision. The decision is based on the language in the declaration. And the language in the declaration does not in any way, shape, or form alter his right to continue to use this patio as a patio. And that's all he's doing by enclosing the solarium. I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Make sure, and please state your name for the record and the party you are representing, and when you are ready, you may begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jessica Richardson. I am the attorney for the respondent, Irvine Hills Homeowners Association, in this case. From time to time, I believe in the brief, and I know when I discuss these issues, I refer to my client as the association or the HOA. Before looking at the declarations here and questions about the declarations, I don't want to skip over the statutory requirements. Minnesota statutes prohibit modification of common areas by a homeowner, by a unit owner, apartment owner, whatever the case may be in the particular scenario. That is Minnesota statute 515B.2-113. I'm jumping ahead to that issue because it seems to address a question raised, but the parties agree on at least three key facts. The appellant does not own the patio that's adjacent to his apartment. The patio adjacent to the apartment is a limited common area or limited common element. Those phrases have been used interchangeably in the documents and the statute. And the declarations grant the appellant the exclusive easement for the use of the patio. So to step back to who has the right to modify, repair, change any common elements, including a limited common element like a patio structurally, the answer is the association itself. And we know that in a number of ways. First, the limited common area is one kind of common area, just to address, to understand why rules applicable to common areas apply. You see that in the declarations. This is document 33 in the record. Page 5 was not included in appellant's addendum, but it is in the record in the complete declarations. Common elements. At paragraph 6, starting on page 4, continuing to page 5, the common areas shall be deemed to consist of all property not included within the apartments. Specifically, continuing on to page 4, sub 6, all patios, decks, balconies, lobbies, lounges, hallways, trash rooms, and laundry rooms. So a patio is a part of the common area. Now, the declarations further specify that it is a kind of common area that is a limited common area because it is exclusive for the use of the owner of the apartment to which is it is attached. With that understanding, going back to the statute I cited earlier, the statute and that is 515.02, I apologize, I skipped one point, and that is the statute also defines a limited common element or a limited common area as including those common areas which are designated as reserved for use of a certain apartment. So the declarations, the statute, those are consistent. A limited common area is one kind of common area. Then going to 515B.2-113, the statute allows that a unit owner may make improvements or alterations to the unit, that would not include a common area, provided they do not affect a common element or a common area. So the statute and the bylaws, that section K, say that if a owner wants to improve their unit or make a modification to their unit, they can do that, bylaws say, with approval, as long as it doesn't affect a common area. There is no affirmative grant of a right to a homeowner to modify a common area, and that includes a limited common area that is reserved by nature of that statute and by the language to the association itself. The easement here, again, there's no disagreement that there is an easement for exclusive use. It is unambiguous. The case law that cited to support an argument that any exclusive easement is ambiguous is not analogous to this case, and I'm referring to APITS v. Hopkins.
Right, and counsel, in terms of that case, I think counsel is, if I understand counsel's argument on and here at oral argument, is that it is not ambiguous, but I think, and I don't mean to put words into appellant's mouth, but I think what he's saying is he thinks his interpretation is correct. You're saying your interpretation of it is correct, but I'm hearing right now neither party's arguing it's actually ambiguous, although if there are two reasonable interpretations, that can lead to ambiguity, but I don't think it sounds to me that's not the issue here. It sounds like both parties are just saying, my interpretation is a correct interpretation. Is that a fair statement?
I believe so, and I believe what I'm maybe hearing or understanding for the first time is that the argument that I heard minutes ago was that it's only that appellant's proposal is only a modification if it modifies the use, what kind of use, as
correct,
opposed to a structural modification. And with that in mind, I would refer the court to the declarations and bylaws. Again, bylaws, Article 3, Section B, for example, provides that the powers and duties of the association include operation, upkeep, maintenance, repair, replacement of the common areas, which includes, again, a limited common area as a subset of common areas.
But does that declaration say anything about modification?
It doesn't use the word modification, no. It uses upkeep, maintenance, repair, replacement, including determination of the,
Right. So when you read that, I didn't hear the word modification. So does the declaration actually give the association the power to modify the patio?
No, the statute does.
Okay. And do the bylaws give the association the power to modify the patio?
They already have the power to modify the patio, to make decisions about modification of common areas by virtue of the statute.
But
unless
it's not
limited.
Right,
the statute says unless limited, unless otherwise in set forth in the declarations and bylaws or the governing documents.
Right, but I just want to clarify that you're not relying on the declaration or the bylaws for the explicit grant of to the association to modify the patio.
Correct. I don't think there needs to be a grant in the there doesn't need to be a grant in the governing documents for the right to the association when it is already reserved and preserved by nature of the statute. The declarations provide can modify or provide further information about what rights are being granted. And to whom?
Well, is that perhaps maybe the nub of the difference between appellant's argument and yours? Appellant is saying it's silent, but because of virtue of, I think, description, he used easement and kind of the law behind easement, therefore I have a right to modify. Your point being, as long, it's silent in terms of modification of a limited common area, but by statute it affirmatively leaves that, grants that to the board, the association.
Correct. It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Council, just a quick question on these pictures. They show it looks like either three or four patios that have been enclosed by the owners. What was that deemed by?
Are you referring to the pictures that are on? They're at index 46.
I think so. That's like unit 306 enclosed balcony and unit 309 enclosed balcony, and then there's a couple more.
Yeah, so I would ask the court to, in addition to these, at index number, 53, there is in the record an aerial view. So up the apartment that we're talking about is under these stone arches in the front of the building. These photographs clearly are not of the stone arches in the front of the building or anywhere. And what you'll see in the record from the aerial view, I would say the main issue here is that these are on the opposite elevation of the building facing the hillside. Specifically, what I recall from the deposition off the top of my head is that the board no longer had access to any information. They've been there for a long time. So what part of the nature of a homeowners association is whether there is a good historical memory of the board. Regardless, even if the board at some point allowed these modifications to balconies on the rear, that's not the question, which is, is there an affirmative right granted to do that without board approval, either by the declarations, the bylaws, the governing documents, or statute? And the answer to that question that the district court determined was no. And because the statute doesn't allow that modification, I believe that's the correct interpretation.
What's the difference between a solarium and those other enclosures, if you know?
I don't know. I don't know anything about these other enclosures other than what we see in the pictures. I understand from the proposal that was submitted, the main difference is that it's on the front of the building under the stone archways.
Okay. And do any of the other stone archways have any type of, in the front of the building, have any type of enclosure?
They do not.
Okay. So the modifications to the patios are on other parts of the apartment building, not the front? Is that what
correct? They're on the rear elevation behind there. I believe it's I'm not sure if it's a one-way street behind, but it faces a steep uphill as opposed to what you see on the first picture here and was in our brief, these stone arches that are considered the front of the building.
So you're talking basically a ground floor apartment or condo then?
I believe so.
Just
I believe
looking at the picture.
I believe there may be an entranceway that may go down. I don't want to. But yes, we are referring to what appears in the picture as the ground level archways on the front of the building.
So aesthetically, they seem to be quite different than the other enclosures.
Correct. With that, I would respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Judge Kirk, thank you for pointing that out. That was one of the points I wanted to get to. As just discussed, the building is a hodgepodge of architectural styles. The building was converted to condominiums in 1980. Many units contain balconies and other patios, including my clients. Yet the declaration and bylaws do not state that balcony enclosures are permitted, while patio enclosures are not permitted. To the contrary, patio, deck, and balcony are lumped together for the exclusive use of the unit owner.
Counsel, could you address the Minnesota statute? Because it sounds like respondent is relying primarily on the statute, and specifically that the right to make modifications to a patio and other structures is limited to, for common elements and limited common elements, is limited to the owner of the building.
Yeah, I will. I've got a limited amount of time. It is not a modification. That's my position. Okay. If you all conclude that it is a modification, I lose. But I don't think it is a modification. I think he's doing nothing other than continuing to use the patio as it's designed, and simply by constructing the solarium, he gets greater use out of it. But I want to make one other point. And it is the safety provided by the proposed solarium. Judge Kirk just pointed out that this is a first floor property. So if you look at the first page of the handout that my worthy opponent was referring to, those five arches are the arches. Excuse me. Those five arches are the arches that front my client's apartment, okay? Now there is on the, this is a southern exposure that you're looking at. So if you're standing on the patio, you're facing south. Now the west wall of that patio is enclosed, and the east wall of that patio is enclosed on arches, say, 1 through 5. There is then, you know, grass, and that grass extends down to the frontal street, okay? This is a safety issue for my client. There's nothing preventing anybody from walking up that grass, walking over the patio, and the only thing that protects him is the lock on a sliding door into his apartment. The proposed solarium will provide needed security to Mr. Gaboy, and the proposed solarium, in summary, does no more than extends the use that he's been granted by the easement. And in that regard, I want everybody to keep in mind that this condominium was formed under 515, you know, sort of an ancient relic at this point in time in the law of condominiums. It's not formed under A, it's not formed under B, it's formed under 515, and they are stuck with the language that they put in that declaration. And that declaration, one, grants him an exclusive easement, and two, so long as he is using the patio in that fashion, they have no right to restrict his use, is the position that we present to the court today, and ask that the court reverse the trial court, hold that the interpretation of the declaration in this case was errant in that it ascribes to the association it holds that my client's proposed change is a modification when it is not. All he is doing is taking the same piece of property to which he has exclusive use, putting in a solarium so that he can use it so much time in the fall and the spring and provide uniformly greater safety for him and his living quarters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council. Appreciate arguments by both parties in your briefing. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both.